joining us right now from USA Today. And just a fine writer indeed. The king of the corduroy, the one, the only, Sam, don't call him dad bod, Amick. Sam, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm good. Loyal listener here. Long time. Am I on the prison podcast this morning? I just wanted to ask.
All right. Full disclosure.
What did you call it, Dave? What did you call
the prison podcast?
No, but you, what were you saying you were going to be talking about?
Oh, how I was going to be leading the. I don't want to get into that again. Yeah. But as full disclosure, Sam and I had a phone conversation after the show yesterday.
Okay.
As we often will. This wasn't anything new, but what tickled my ears is Sam was on the Highway 160 on his way to Warriors shoot around, and he was tuning in the drive. And hey, we appreciate that, Sam. And Sam was actually rolling through journalist style, like with odds and stuff, because our question was, could we survive, the three of us, a year in prison?
Right.
And Sam was kind of breaking it down in detail. And I thought you did a fine job, Sam, and that should actually be a future column of yours.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how deep we're going to go. Katie, I gave you some love and gave Dave some grief over the little back and forth that you guys had. He tried to say, you know, he chose some vernacular and some verbiage that you picked up on and made
questionable.
Sure that he was, yes.
Well, I look at it this way. I feel like I have the best odds because I survived 6 years in the WNBA, so...
What, that's like prison?
Probably going to be okay in prison.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Sam, you thought I got loose yesterday. My goodness.
I know, right? Well, I just felt guilty. I just said yeah, and then I was like, oh, I shouldn't say yeah. I should just be quiet.
Katie, did you just fall off your chair?
No, I moved my microphone.
It sounded like a brass band. Sam, before we get into the nuts and bolts here, no pun intended, rank for us 1 through 3, 1 being easiest, 3 being the toughest. How would you rank the people on the show as to how they would survive a year in prison?
Oh, come on.
What are you doing?
I'm just saying.
What are you doing?
Who would be the favorite?
Me and Nate need to have beers and get to know each other a little more. It's been a radio relationship for the most part.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've seen him, right?
Yeah, I've seen him. Okay. And I've seen Dave. So, sorry, Dave.
by the way, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No, you.
I'm not super comfortable.
No, Katie's going to win.
I had a feeling.
I mean, she's clearly the alpha.
Jeez. Wow, Nate.
So charming and all those things. But, she's got the toughness from the playing days. She's got the charm and the personality. So I think the combo is there. And Dave, your illusions about your podcasting ability saving you are probably off base.
You think that's going to happen? I like the idea of me doing a podcast from, like, the warden's room with, like, the little handheld CB radio thing over the speakers. And everybody, we wouldn't get phone calls necessarily, but people could, like put their, what are those metal cups across the bars and stuff. Hey, Anthony Tolliver went to Creighton, by the way, guys.
There you go. Good one.
All right. Sam, you had an article that I wanted to talk about, and it's cool because this is something not just us, but LeVar Ball has been in the news everywhere. You can't get past LeVar Ball. And one of the things we've been talking about on the show, and I'm sure throughout sports radio in the country, is Lonzo Ball is almost assuredly at least the number 2 pick and possibly the number 1 pick between him and Markelle Fultz, depending on who you talk to. But is his dad hurting his draft chances? Is he making GMs a little squeamish about drafting not only Lonzo Ball, but what comes with him? And you wrote an article, and the access that you have, you were able to kind of make a determination by actually talking to real people.
Yeah, it was fun to do. I enjoyed it. You guys, to be honest, because I do enjoy the show, you guys were one of the folks who kind of spurred me along to do it because I had heard some of the feedback and the commentary on the show and certainly agreed with a lot of it, and it was interesting, from a parenting standpoint to hear you guys break down LeVar and what he's been doing. And so I called a bunch of front office folks and bottom line, and I was kind of surprised. It's not that I thought anybody was going to say, there's no way we're going to draft the kid now because his father. But I thought there'd be more recoiling and more, kind of rolling of the eyes. And there was some of that. But bottom line, NBA executives are good at their jobs, and that means that they cut through all the noise, and the determination from almost everybody I talked to was that, you know, listen, dad is dad, player is player, and the player is a high-character player, you know, high-character person with no off-court issues and a fantastic talent and the kind of guy that the way that he plays the game is you know, selfless and tremendous. He's just a very, very good player. And I mean, it's been a while since I even heard executives. Now, granted, I'm not pulling them on every potential top five pick, but I mean, man, guys were just like raving about how good he's going to be and focusing on that instead of the nonsense that we are focusing on, because it's good media, you know, good reality show stuff potentially. And they, you know, bottom line, dad's not hurting them. They feel like in the NBA, it's a big boy league. And no matter how loud your parents are, they are going to become, you know, essentially irrelevant once you're a pro.
I guess maybe, Sam, the question then is, and I'm not surprised to hear them say that, because it is, it's a business, it's a multi-billion dollar business, and they're in it to win games, and they'll deal with whatever else they have to deal with. But if Lonzo Ball wasn't the caliber of player that he is, do you think that his dad's behavior would be turning people off? Because it's like, oh, you know what? He has the potential to be a good player. We're not really sure, but we don't really want the headache. But because they know and they have this feeling that he is going to be an amazing NBA player, do you think that at all has swayed the answer you got?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. I had one particular executive who had said what you're saying, where he said, you know, if you have, like, say as a team that you're torn and you have the number one pick and you're going Fultz and you're going Lonzo and you're trying to figure it out. And maybe, you know, for based on team needs and style and what you think about how those two guys would fit with your team, let's say it's just a dead heat. Like, your room is totally split. It's 50-50. You know, could this, you know, as a tiny, tiny tipping point, swing it one direction? Sure. But the other thing that, you know, teams and executives are kind of leaning on to not worry too much about this is that LeVar is, you know, as loud as he is, and again, we can't pretend to really know the guy and his family and whatnot, but he has been there for his kids, you know, in terms of raising them. And the assumption is that he's going to continue living in L.A. raising his other children, and that he's not going to be with Lonzo wherever he's at in the NBA. So people are kind of assuming, like, well, you know, you're not going to have to see him all the time. Now, the only team that would be very different for, of course, and this is a real possibility, is obviously the Lakers. I think from what I've heard, you know, they would love to get Lonzo and apparently be more than willing to deal with, you know, his father on the side. But I mean, to your point, you know, yeah, you know, if it was one of the factors that made a, you know, determination, I could see that. It's also, and this is a little deeper, and I thought, you know, one GM hit, you know, made another really interesting point, which is that, as you guys know, there's a lot of guys in the NBA, as this GM had said, with much tougher stories than my dad's brash. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of NBA players who have overcome things that were much tougher and much more kind of, you know, deep-seated than having a loud father. So it is a viral kind of thing at the moment, but, you know, I think we can't lose sight of that, too.
Sam Amick, USA Today, with us on the drive. Sam, there are literally hundreds of guys in the NCAA tournament not named Lonzo Ball that could all become a household name overnight by just a couple of big performances here or there. At this time of year, whether it's a great performance from a guy that wasn't necessarily known or a terrible performance from a hot commodity, is this type of thing, the tournament, more likely to hurt or help a guy's draft stock?
Are you talking, Nate, about the how a guy plays in the tournament?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a factor. I feel like the trend is towards de-emphasizing what a guy does in the tournament. And, you know, because the research and the data and, you know, like how far back these players are scouted in terms of how young they are, it just gets bigger and larger and, you know, just deeper in terms of the research every single year. And that means that the teams and the executives try to be disciplined and train themselves to fight against the regular human reaction that we all have, which is, you know, if Lonzo Ball goes out and, you know, wins the Bruins the national title, you know, don't do a backflip and say best player in, you know, on the planet since Michael Jordan. We all know LeVar's going to say that, but, you know, like, that's the tournament is just, it's still only a small sample size. So all that being said, you know, it can't, you know, it's going to either help or hurt you. If you fall on your face in the tournament, the teams are going to remember that. But I just think they try to temper the degree to which they take it into account. I mean, a couple of names that come to mind, you know, Kings backstories, you know, Francisco Garcia, when he took Louisville to the Final Four,
yep,
was a hot commodity. It's not, you know, Cisco had a really good long career, but I think at the time, based on the hype and the buzz of what he had done, you know, you thought the guy was going to get a couple of all-star appearances. Kemba Walker, you know, he took the NCAA tournament by storm, and he's now having a fantastic career, but it took him, you mm-hmm. know, about 4 years to get his stuff going in the NBA.
Shabazz Napier.
Yeah.
More recently.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so every year, you know, we see guys that they don't keep that momentum going, and I think that the NBA teams know that. I mean, they try to not get too caught up in the hype.
Sam Amick, USA Today, joining us on KHDK. And speaking of the draft, since we last talked, and we put this stat out earlier, Scalabissiere had a 32-point, 10-rebound game, and we remarked the first time that's been done since Mike Jaminski was a rookie coming off the bench. He did that in 1980. I threw that stat out a little stupidly. It's the first time since Jaminski that a rookie coming off the bench has had at least 30 and 10 since 1980. And the Scal hype in this town, for obvious reasons, is definitely a big, fat, rolling train. Now that you cover the NBA, you know, from a few thousand feet, and you experience a lot of other locker rooms and talk to a lot of people, has the initial scorn with the DeMarcus Cousins trade, has that tapered off as of late, not just with the Scal and Buddy Hield stuff, but also with the troubles that the Pelicans and Cousins have had?
I think so. You know, I haven't circled back that much, but in a handful of conversations with people and just the vibe and the sense, I would agree with that for sure. Scal, you know, it's not just the Sacramento hype thing. I think, you know, his impact and his, you know, people taking notice is certainly going beyond Sacramento at this point. I mean, that's the power of social media and kind of the whole world being smaller these days is people are definitely noticing, even though we're watching the race for the number one seed in the West and, you know, the MVP race and stuff like that. I feel like every couple nights it's like, oh man, look at Scal doing it again, you know? And shout out to Jerry Reynolds, who always cracks me up and does such a great job. And he had that line the other night about getting rescalibrated.
Yes.
you know, he just looks like a confident, you know, versatile player. And they've commented on the telecast about the way he comports himself. And Katie, I've heard you talk about that too. And just, you know, seems humble, but seems like he's really going in a fantastic direction. For me, just considering my background as, you know, a guy who covered the team for years, it's a little surreal and probably, you know, adds a little perspective to sit there and watch Scal do what he's doing, but then have a little dose of a reminder to not get too ahead of the projections when Tyreek Evans is on the floor with him. And the irony of, you know, Tyreek,
right,
you know, that was the last time that Kings fans, you know, had something to be truly excited about. And not, I mean, DeMarcus got folks excited for sure, but with Tyreek, it was actually in the context of winning. People thought the winning was going to come, you know, with the way Tyreek played, and they thought they had a little mini LeBron James on their hands. So, you know, you hope that Scal can keep the progress going, but yeah, man, he's fun to watch, and he seems like a nice kid, and it's a great thing for them right now.
I want to shift with you for a minute, Sam, because I want to get to this before we have to let you go. One of the, I think, most exciting things about this time of year right now in the NBA, the last kind of month of basketball, is the MVP race. And it's it's kind of a hot button issue this year because Russell Westbrook is putting up just absolutely insane numbers,
MVP.
But there is a lot of people that do not think that he is the MVP, which is kind of a little bit crazy to a certain degree. But then yesterday, a reporter asked Russell Westbrook about Steph Curry coming out and saying he believes that James Harden is the MVP because of the numbers he's putting up and what his team is doing. And Russell Westbrook's response was, who's that? Like, I don't care. Like, who's that? At what point is Russell Westbrook just kind of, did the whole situation with Kevin Durant, has that completely changed him to the point where he is just flipping the bird to everybody at this point?
You know, in media scrums on a consistent basis, yes. The fascinating thing to me about Russ is just that he's just, as a personality, he's got this ability to turn it on and turn it off because he is one of the most interesting dudes that I follow on Snapchat.
Uh-huh.
And it's like you look at him on Snapchat and it's like, you know, it's like watching the Beavers. Like, he's normal. He's happy. He interacts with human beings and does, you know, very cheerful, positive things. And he's just a different guy in the media and more, you know, importantly, kind of in his work life on the floor, he's kind of a killer and he's a robot. And so I talked to a Warriors person about this exact thing that you're talking about, Katie, last night.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you know, they're kind of tired, not kind of, they're tired of the media taking everything, you know, conceivably anti-Russ from the Warriors and putting it right in Russ's lap and giving him the red meat. They're kind of focusing on the media, wishing they would stop doing that. I, of course, was kind of saying like, well, okay, but he takes the bait every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just the way he's wired. He was pretty darn prickly even when Kevin was there. I would love to get a mic on him, you know, in a private moment on the MVP race to hear some of his commentary on the idea that he might not win it. Because I guarantee you, you know, it would be R-rated stuff. And I feel for him because I don't think he's going to win it. And, you know, it sounds weird. It's not, you know, normal to kind of get caught up and say, oh, I wish this guy would win it. Yeah, and I'm not rooting for anybody, but it's a pretty special thing what he's doing, and I don't think he's going to win it. And right now, I'm probably not voting for him.
Hmm.
It is a very tight race.
Because you're wrong. Sorry, go ahead.
I know, man. I hear you.
All right.
I mean, it's a crazy race, and I hope people realize how crazy it is and how special it is. And I sound like an NBA PR person, but like the history, like we know Russ and the triple-double stuff, okay? So I'm going to skip over that. It's incredible. The one thing I keep saying is that he's not the only dude making history. James at 28, 11, and 8, or 29 rather, is Oscar is also the only other guy to do that. And it's only happened twice. And I know it's easy to package triple doubles in a nice round box and have that be the focal point of the MVP storyline. But, you know, you're talking about something that's only happened in one season. And then with James, you're talking about something that's only happened in two seasons. And then, by the way, and this also to me moves the needle, I mean, Kawhi's great, but he's not checking this box of history in any statistical sense. LeBron and what he is doing, career high, almost 9 assists a game with the scoring and hitting the glass. Oscar and Michael are the only two dudes ever to do what LeBron has done. Oscar did it 5 times, and Michael Jordan, with his incredible career, only hit LeBron's numbers on average 1 time in his career. So history is getting made all over the board, but only one guy can win it.
Sam Amick is KHDK's NBA Insider, presented by Stockton Honda, Northern California's fastest growing Honda dealer. Get your 15-minute trade-in appraisal at StocktonHonda.com. And the text line is blowing up. So as we let you go, Sam, let me just clear up something for those in that are not over 30 years old. When Sam Amick said that watching Russell Westbrook on Snapchat was like watching the Beavers, he meant the show Leave It to Beaver and how normal and everyday they were,
oh,
not how 90 of you took that. So standing in front of you, buddy.
Another word for our bracket.
Oh, yeah. Sam, we've got a bracket going. We got a break, but we got a bracket going since you're a wordsmith of words that are normal words, like not swear words or offensive words, but just sound disgusting. Yeah. What, you want to hear a sample of what we got so far?
Yeah, let's do it.
Membrane, moist, pimple, bile, sputum, septum, mucus, seeping, squirt, slurp, secrete, fungus, gurgle, plug, pus,
discharge,
yeast, and heave.
Ooh, you didn't take my favorite.
What?
But I gotta give credit. Shout out to my friend and colleague, Joe Davidson.
Uh-huh.
Smegma.
Oh, is that a real word? I thought that was a made-up word.
Don't Google it.
No, I won't. You.
Don't Google it.
All right, Sam, I hear you're going to the mountains this weekend. Is that accurate?
I am going to the mountains. I'm going to make your conversation even worse. You guys are aware of the Fournier thing.
Yes, we talked about it. That's what started this whole thing was Google him.
All right. Yeah, we're heading to the mountains. I'm kind of bummed. It'd be a great trip, a great little breather before the playoffs. But, you know, missing out on the March Madness action. But should be a good time.
I know that because your neighbor sold you out on my text line. So there you go.
Oh, did he really?
Yes, sir. Yeah. All right.
Hey, John, see, he deserves a plug. There you go.
The plug is also on the list. Thank you, Sam. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, guys.
All right, take care. Sam. When we return, we'll update you on the Marshawn Lynch story. Could he be an Oakland Raider? We have some fun sound there. And breaking news outside the world of sports is going to possibly upset you. We'll do that in 5 minutes. 11th caller right now at 339-1140. You get a pair of tickets to All Access with 2 Chainz, Lil Jon, Lloyd, and Rob Stone, March 31st, Tower Bridge, Gateway Lot in West Sacramento. 11th caller right now at 339-1140. Back in 5, Sports 1140 KHDK.